Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 32 Thoughts joins us on the line. The not so agreeable Elliot Friedman, I might add.
I have to say, I got text messages about that yesterday. Be nicer to Matt. So today I'm not disagreeing with anything you tell me.
No. Right, don't, Matt, do that.
Yes, sir, Matt.
That must have been my mom.
Yes, sir, no, sir. Three bags full, Matt.
That must have been my mom that texted you. She must have been really upset. Actually, it's my mom's birthday today, so happy birthday, Mom.
Oh,
I almost forgot to do that. Mary Lane.
Happy birthday, Mary Lane.
Yeah, and I'm not going to tell you how old she is.
And since you already forgot to wish her happy birthday, you better go get her a good gift.
Oh, we got her a good gift. I already called her this morning at like 7:30, so don't worry. I was all over it. Speaking of all over it, it felt like the Colorado Avalanche were all over the Edmonton Oilers, especially defensively last night. After that first period, it looked like a completely different game where it really did feel like Colorado just smothered them. I saw 16 block shots for the Avs last night, and it felt like a lot more.
Yeah, I agree with you. The signature play of the game, I thought, was when was that one-on-one McDavid McCarr. And McCarr made the great defensive play to knock the puck off his stick. You know, we talked about it in the postgame last night. Jeff and I talked about it in the pod this morning. You know, Taze McCarr, the belief is, and I'm pretty sure it's true, they were going to the Olympics as a pair. That, you know, for Team Canada, they were going to go together and they were going to play together. And it makes a lot of sense. It's a really, really smart idea. And I think that's exactly what they were thinking about and exactly what they were planning on doing. And if there was anybody that doubted the idea that that was good, I think we all saw it last night. They're both great skaters. They're both really smart players. McCarr's on a completely other level. And, you know, the other thing I really thought about is, and I actually was thinking about this today as before I came on the show, I just wonder someday if the way McCarr plays and seeing him in this series, and you're right, it's not over, seeing him in this series, I wonder if he becomes a Hart Trophy candidate someday, even more so than he already is now.
Well, the hardest – go ahead.
No, I'm done. I'm good.
The hardest part about being a defenseman in this league, like the offense for some of these guys is, you know, it for a guy like McCarr comes easily – but the defensive part of the game is where a lot of younger players struggle just because of the speed, maybe the physicality. But he has both of those traits. And I agree with you. I think he's absolutely a guy that's going to be in the Hart Trophy conversation.
Yeah, and maybe I'm a bit late to the party on that. I'm sure some people will say, hello, what are you watching? I said that already. But I look at that and – sometimes you need to be seen by it's not like Colorado isn't seen or Cale Makar hasn't been seen, but I think this series, if it continues going the way it's going and then they go into the final, I just wonder if it's going to be – if it's going to take his candidacy and what people think about him to an even higher level. And games like that are what does it. And that play like that – like to think McDavid's coming at you full speed, he's backing up and he makes a perfect stick check. I think that play, it burns in people's irises. They remember it forever.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those plays that it happened so early in the game too, and it was almost, you know, in hindsight, it really was the trendsetter for what ended up being the rest of the game. I know you pointed out
That's why you bring me on, Matt, for this superior analysis.
That's it. Even when you don't agree with me. you pointed out Devon Taves and the weird game he had in game one. I didn't – this is going to be weird to say, but I didn't notice him as much in game two, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, you know what the one thing that stood out to me too was the very first play they drew it up for, right? Like they do that draw pass and he goes in and he gets a great chance and Smith made a hell of a save on it. It was almost to me like, I don't know if they did that because they thought it would, well, I'm sure they did because they thought it would work, but part of me was watching it and looking at it and saying, are they just doing this to give Taves a better feeling at the start of the game. Like the last game, kind of some weird stuff happened, as you said, and now we're going to give him a chance to get off on a better footing, and we set up a rush for him right away. Now, I don't know that that's the case, but watching it, I kind of wondered about it, and I like that play was so brilliant, and it worked so well, and you know, only a great save stopped it from happening. But I just have to say, like, that Colorado team last night, that's as perfect a game as I think you can play in a playoff game at this time of the year. Like, when you look at the quality of the teams that are left and the quality of the players that are left, I'm not sure. Like, the Rangers played really well the other night in beating Tampa, and I thought it was a great game for them. But this, to me, what Colorado did to Edmonton last night was on a whole other level.
Well, they completely shut them down. And they, you know, when Edmonton gets seven shots in the final 30 minutes of the game, when they're down 3-0, I mean, that to me says everything that I need to know, because they really did a good job of keeping them to the outside last night. And whenever Edmonton did get an opportunity to get inside, the shot was blocked or went wide and they were getting in lanes. I agree. It was a masterclass. The one for me that kind of stood out was the 5-on-3 in the first period. Mike Smith makes a couple of really big saves, and I'm thinking, okay, this is going to turn on its head here. Edmonton's going to be able to capitalize. And right after that, Puljujarvi gets two great chances in front of the net, and Francouz is there with two big saves to answer. And that seemingly to me was when everything kind of changed, and then it was like Colorado is going to be a really tough team to beat tonight, just because the goalie looked sharp right off the bat. And that was something that we wondered about going into that game.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I thought Francouz was very good. Sometimes it probably shouldn't always happen that way, but I think so many of these players are creatures of habit, Matt, that, you know, you go into the game in the middle and you don't get to do your regular routine. You're not settled, right? And even though Francouz, because he's not the starter, has to kind of be ready for that, it's easier said than done. I think it's something that's much easier said from us in the comfort of our, you know, couches, as opposed to actually being in the game. And he wasn't settled. He wasn't as – obviously, he wasn't as good in game one as he was last night. I think you get to go through your regular routine. You know you're starting. You know you're in the game. Sometimes it just puts you in a better mental frame of mind. And I think that was definitely the case last night. I thought he was really good. You know, I've had people in Denver tell me that they think he's a really good goalie. And, you know, when you're not the number one and people only see you sporadically, sometimes it sounds like just like talk, like spin. And what he showed last night was he was up to the challenge. Now, if they want to win the Stanley Cup, he's going to have to do it six more times. And we'll see where this all goes. But he did certainly validate the thoughts of some people in that organization.
We just got news. Zach Cassian has been fined for his $2,500 for his incident last night of pulling Bowen Byram's helmet off on the bench. Tried to make it look
You know what I have to say about that is, and to me, I just thought that's weird that that's coincidental minors. Like, I think if you're on the bench and you pull someone's helmet off and Byram gets a penalty, if you want to give Byram a penalty, that's fine. But I think in that situation, Colorado should have a man advantage.
I agree. He's not even on the field to play, and he's causing a problem and getting a penalty. One of those rare cases where that happens. I agree. I did want to ask you something about Francouz from last night. This feels like a very Jeff Merrick question, so it's par for the course.
Oh, no. I was hoping I was rid of him for 2 days.
Don't worry. You get him back on Monday. The poke check on Darnell Nurse at the end of the second period, if he is a left-handed catching goaltender, we might be having a different conversation.
No, that's because true. That was Kelly a great said chance. That on the air. Kelly said that on the air. It was the exact same thing that Kelly said. So it's not a Jeff Merrick question, which are generally terrible. It's more of a Kelly Rudy question. Oh my God. Somebody was just driving down my street and he rolled down his window and he pointed at me and said, I'm listening to you as I just saw you walking in front of your house. That's pretty funny.
Hello to the listener in the car by Elliot's house. Okay. Nazem Kadri last night was all over the ice. He was great. Three assists. We thought he maybe had the goal, the first goal, but it ended up being Lekkonen's goal, who we'll get to in a few minutes here. But
yeah, Kadri was good call as a tip.
Yeah, and Kadri was just, he was all over the ice. And, you know, he's had, after dealing with the racist tweets and messages and threats and all that stuff, for a guy that's had to deal with that, he's been able to put it in his rearview mirror, and he's had an incredible playoff for the Avalanche.
Well, look, I don't know if you ever put it in the rearview mirror. I think what you try to do is you compartmentalize. I don't know if that ever goes away. I think what it comes down to is sometimes when you're on the ice, you just think about being on the ice, and that it's, you're at your freest because you don't have to think about all that other stuff. I think when you're sometimes away from the ice, especially if you're with your family, you want that stuff to go away, but it doesn't always go away because you're thinking about, you know, protecting your family and how they feel in all those moments. I think when you play, that's when you truly get the opportunity to say, look, I got to worry on this right now because I have got a Stanley Cup I'm trying to win. And, you know, you don't have to think about all that BS. And you know, I think the thing about Kadri is that, you know, the history is well known. We know why he was traded out of Toronto. He had to deal with it again last year or when he got suspended. But, you know, we're always all learning, right? We're always learning. We're always trying to make the best among us are always trying to make themselves better. And with him, it has been purely a challenge of, can you walk that line? Can you control your emotions? And, you know, right now, Colorado is 6 wins from a Stanley Cup, and he's doing a phenomenal job of it. And again, Kelly pointed out last night, he takes a penalty near the end of the second period, and he just goes and sits in the box. Like, there's no fury. There's no smashing cameras. There's none of that stuff. He just goes and he deals with it. And I think that's the kind of thing that when I look at with Kadri is, and I've told this story before, I used to have a horrible temper. And my father warned me. He said that if you don't learn to get that under control, that is going to cost you in a big moment, and it's going to cost you dearly. And Kadri has had to deal with that by being suspended in the playoffs. And I think that's the message you have to teach yourself, is that you have to sit there and say, if I don't get this under control, it's consistently going to be to my team and myself's disadvantage. And he's doing a phenomenal job right now at it, and 6 more games to go. But as for the other BS, I don't know if you ever put that behind you. I think that everybody is wired differently. Some people do, some people don't. But what you have to do well is you have to compartmentalize at certain times.
I don't disagree with that at all. Well said. By the way, you having a temper as a younger child or maybe a teenager, that strikes me as very odd. So you were basically Marty McFly as a kid.
I don't know if I would say that, because Marty McFly had musical talent. So I definitely did not. I did have a bad temper. It's a constant thing. I don't know if you ever really get rid of it, but you learn to contain it a lot better. I think that's the best answer I can give you.
Yeah, that's fair. Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 32 Thoughts. Okay, the Edmonton page here. We saw them split up McDavid and Draisaitl last night, and then the lines got all messed up because of the Yamamoto injury. Do we see that in Game 3? Do we see them split those two guys up and have Draisaitl play with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and whoever the third guy is on that line? Because we know Draisaitl can't play center right now. Well, do we see that going forward?
You know, the easy answer to that, well, first of all, I think the one thing about Jay Woodcroft is he's done a really good job of pushing the right buttons all the time in Edmonton. And I think he's got a really good feel for what works there. And he's generally everybody makes decisions that don't work, but I would say the vast, vast, vast majority of decisions he makes work. And so I would trust his instincts. That's the number one thing I would say. The thing I felt best about them splitting them up is it obviously made them feel that Draisaitl was readier to handle a heavier workload. on the injury. Look, game one, they scored 6 times. Game two, they didn't score at all. They played 49 seconds together, for example, in the first period, and 48 of them were on one shift where they were all over the Avalanche. I mean, to me, I probably go back to it in game three, but I would defer to the guy who's made a lot of the right calls for the Oilers so far this year.
I said we were going to get to Arturi Lehkonen, and I totally forgot. So let's do a quick thing on Lehkonen. That was
nobody keeps their promises. Like, so don't worry about that.
Well, I did want to get to him because he was good again last night.
Yep.
And he's been a really valuable piece for them. A guy that can move up and down the lineup. He can kill penalties. He can play on your second power play unit if you need him to. But he's found a really nice home on that line with Rantanen and Kadri, and he's an RFA, and he's due for a raise, but that was a tidy bit of business. I know the price was high. I know it was a second in Justin Barron.
You pay that price
for a guy that is going to be effective for you in the playoffs, and he's been a great fit in Colorado.
Yeah, I'm really happy for I'm happy for him. I think he's a heck of a player. Look, I don't think anybody should be surprised. Last year in their run to the Stanley Cup final, everybody saw how good he was. He fits a role. And the thing about that Colorado team is you can't play there if you can't skate. And they got a lot of guys who can really skate. They push the tempo. They're a hell of a team. And, you know, he fits in with that. He can keep up with all those guys. He can play with good players. And, you know, the other thing, too, about Colorado is there's a reason that they do everything. Look, there's a lot of teams that if they thought they had a chance to win a Stanley Cup this year, like Colorado did, they might have traded a Bowen Byram. They would have said, you know what, if that's the price we pay to win a Stanley Cup, maybe we do that. And Colorado said no. And this was a really hard year for Byram. And I think it's actually quietly one of the better stories of the continuing playoffs is that he looks like he's healthy enough to get back to being the player that everybody thought he was going to be, and that's great for him and his family. And so the Avalanche said, no, we're not doing that, and look at the way he's playing. They could have traded Newhook, and they said, no, we're not doing that. We believe in him. Now, Newhook's not having the same impact yet that Byram's having, but he's a really good player. Like, I look at the Avalanche, and they have good NHL players, players who could play for just about any team that are not – that are not playing right now, like Nico Sturm. That guy could play for a lot of teams, and he's a healthy scratch. Burakovsky, and I know he's injured right now, but earlier in the playoffs, that guy could play for just about anybody, and he's a healthy scratch. Like, Colorado makes good decisions, and Lehkonen, I think, is a good decision.
And let's not forget that Nicholas Obey-Kubel couldn't even play for the Philadelphia Flyers, apparently. After they waived him.
It happens. It's one of those things, like there's some teams that get reputations when they call you and they want someone. You're like, okay, why are they calling us about this guy? And I think right now Colorado's one of those teams. I know it was a waiver pickup, but Colorado's one of those teams. Like, they target guys. Like, you know, they're a really good mix of old school and analytical thinking. You know, Joe Sakic, a lot of people would have fired Jared Bednar, and he didn't. You know, a lot of people might have thought about blowing up a team after lost in the second round all those times, and he didn't. But he also surrounds himself. He's got a really good analytic team. He's got people he really listens to who are eye test and analytic guys, people who find players. Like, it's a really smart organization.
And they're in on everybody, it seems. Every big name that comes across the board, it feels like they're in on them. Okay,
well, you know what? They asked about Kane this year, Patrick, and Chicago wasn't doing that. And remember a few years ago when Panarin was a free agent, they made him a really creative offer, like a 4-year deal at really big numbers. And Panarin went to the Rangers, but I remember thinking, like, that's a really smart idea.
And boy, would he look good there, too. Okay, we spent a lot of time on the Avalanche. I know, even with my hair and beard. Okay, so let's look to tonight. We know that the Tampa Bay Lightning are really good after a loss in the playoffs over the last couple of years. The last three postseason, 17-0, 3.94 goals for per game, 1.64 goals against per game. Andrei Vasilevsky is lights out, 942 save percentage, 5 shutouts, blah, 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 blah. Do we think that the narrative stays the same tonight? Because John Cooper said, we will be ready in a couple of days and we have more to give. Do we think, Elliot, you are a betting man. Is it a Lightning and the under type night tonight?
I don't like giving betting advice to other people because if I lose anyone money, I just want it to be mine. I don't want it to be anyone else's. Jeff and I joked on the podcast over under 1,000 times Vasilevsky's record after a loss is brought up today. Like, I took the over, and thank you for contributing to it.
No problem. Look,
Cooper's right. He didn't even need to say it. The Rangers deserve a lot of credit. They were outstanding on Wednesday. Tampa wasn't that good. And one thing they've shown is that when the Lightning are down, they come back with better games, and Vasilevsky comes back with better games. And the Rangers know it. Tampa's going to be better tonight. So, you know, we'll see where this goes, but I expect that Tampa's going to be a much better team.
Yeah, they, you know, and the guy that I'm expecting to take the next step, because like I said yesterday, I didn't think Vasilevsky was all that bad despite giving up 6 goals.
I agree with you. I thought he was, you know what I thought was really interesting? I was talking about with Kelly last night. There were some times where the puck could have hit Vasilevsky in the mask, and he moved his head out of the way, which I have no problem with, like to make saves. And he moved his head out of the way. And if you watch Smith last night, he tries to hit it, let it hit. And some goalies are like that. Like Mike Richter's career ended that way. And yeah. Henrik Lundqvist used to do that. He would like head it because he loves soccer. He would head it into the crowd and things like that. But, you know, I just thought it was really interesting that Vasilevsky was clearly trying not to let his head get hit. And Smith was like, screw it. If I can make a save and it goes off my head, I'm doing that. I thought it was just an interesting difference.
You got to be crazy to be a goalie anyway. I mean, that goes without saying. But the guy –
if I could do it all over again, Marchese, I would be a goalie.
Oh, no. My brother was a goalie. Yeah, he still is.
I love it.
But no
I
thanks.
Love it.
No.
I did it in intramurals a couple times at Western. Like there were they couldn't find a goalie and they had to forfeit if they couldn't get one. So they said, just put it on. We don't care if we lose. We just want to play. So I did it a couple times. I loved it.
Oh no. I did it once when I was 6 and I had 2 guys who ended up being future NHL draft picks shooting on me. Yeah. That'll never happen again. I can promise you. Okay. quickly here, Daryl Sutter, Jack Adams Award, nice little touch having his brother, Brian.
Yeah. It was nice.
Present him with the award. You know, Daryl Sutter has really kind of changed the perception of himself, because it used to be Daryl Sutter is old and crotchety and he's hard to deal with in the media. And now he's completely transformed this Flames team. I know that they didn't have a playoff that they were hoping for, but he's changed the perception of himself around the league and with fans and media, hasn't he?
You know, I don't know if I would agree with that. I still think he's the
finally
Daryl's. Yeah. I don't know if I would agree with that. I still think he's the same Daryl Sutter. I don't think he's changed at all. I think what it is that I think that he's demanding. Like, he coaches every game like it's a game 7. And I think that's a hard thing for some people to get their heads around. Like you know, like, for example, like the Flames this year, they had their division wrapped up really early. And, you know, he's thinking – I'm not going to let them ease up. I want them in a certain frame of mind to play the playoffs. And I think that helped get them through a really tough first-round series against Dallas. I don't think Daryl Sutter changes for anybody. I think that he has a certain set of values. He really believes in those values. And I think what he's shown is that his attention to detail, his demanding nature, and the fact that he doesn't really ease up on the gas pedal too much. I think if you have a team of players who are willing to learn and compete and are driven, it can have a great effect. And I think, you know, you look at the Flames last year when he took over, you know, they had a disappointing season. They were really down. And I think that there were a bunch of players there who were, for whatever reasons, they were ready to ready to handle that. And he was perfect for them. And the other thing I think about Sutter is, like, again, Zadorov Gudbranson, I bring this back all the time. There's no other coach in the league, I don't think, who could have had that defensive pair this year. And he did a fantastic job with them. He said, this is your role. This is how we're going to use you. And it worked. It worked really well. And I think that's one of his biggest strengths is he tells people, this is your role, and this is how you're going to be used. Lou Lamoriello has a line. I'm going to butcher it because I don't have it right in front of me. It's like, the bricklayers don't the bricklayers lay the bricks, and they don't do something else. Like, just name something else. And that's the way Sutter is. He's just, this is your role, and this is what you're going to do. And, you know, I think it's old school, but sometimes I think we equate old school with bad. It's not. You've got to be willing to bring in new ideas and things like that, but I don't think old school is bad. And the one thing I think about him is he's consistent. That's the way he is. You know what you're going to get. And I think in this day and age where life is so up and down, consistent is really good.
I would agree with all that. Well said. It only took you 31 minutes to disagree with me today, so we are making progress, Elliot. Great job.
You know why? Because it's I went past my time, so I was cranky.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
I got well, you I was on past 12:30, so I was cranky.
Yeah, well, I apologize for that. That was my fault, and you are free. Have a great weekend, and we'll watch you on TV tonight, buddy.
All right, take care, Marchese. Have a great weekend.
Thank you very much. There he goes, Elliot Friedman.